Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that we'll be talking about assorted tax strategies, perhaps some real estate private partnership syndication opportunities, Roth conversions for sure today. And just because we talk about them on the air and we may make it sound like it's the most wonderful thing since sliced bread, which some of these are far better for you anyway. In any event, don't run out and try these strategies, these investment options, etc., without consulting with your existing advisors. And hopefully your existing advisors know a lot more about your specific facts and circumstances than I do at this point, and can guide you accordingly, help you understand whether what you heard was correct, and more importantly, applicable to your current facts and circumstances. So, for those of you that don't have existing advisors, you're welcome to go to our website at baplanner.com and complete at least the first of the forms that you'll find at the forms link, which is at the top right side of baplanner.com. And then once you've submitted that, you can go one link to the right, the last link on the right top corner, to call and go ahead and schedule a call with me. I'll be happy to spend some time with you to ascertain how or if, if we might help you and in achieving your goals and objectives. Now's a good time to be looking at real estate private partnerships. And further, it's even better to be looking at real estate private partnership syndications in conjunction with planning for doing a Roth conversion shortly thereafter, because you can save a ton of money over the rest of your life with respect to your tax liability on what it takes to live. And that's over and above the real gravy, which is the enhanced cash flows that you might expect to receive from real estate private partnership syndications versus other options that you might otherwise choose to invest in. And I know we've mentioned real estate private partnership syndication several times already. We've hardly been on the air a couple minutes. And I want to just remind you what we've discussed previously, that those vehicles entail. Real estate private partnership syndications involve multiple investors like yourself passively pulling their funds together in a partnership that's offered under the SEC, that's the U.S. Security Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. A syndicator, sponsor, or lead partner, common names for the party or parties that serve as the manager for that entity, typically an LLC, that will be choosing the property, performing the due diligence leading up to closing, arranging for its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt placement and equity raise phases. In other words, coming up with the money from folks like yourself, as well as the lenders that are involved on probably 60 to 70% of the funds to be used to acquire that property. The manager's role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. Now, what have I left out? I've left out anything that you have to do. And I did allude to the equity raise function that the manager has to undertake. And that's where you come in. You're putting your money into a transaction. You're not doing much of anything else. You're not finding the property. You're not having to go find a lender to fund 60 to 70% in the current modus operandi that multifamily investments are able to borrow money in. You're not having to find the other passive partners. You are passive. It's a wonderful place to be if you're like most of our clients and you're 50-ish on up, where you're at a point in life where maybe you want to join me and part-time live abroad. Southeast Asia, great place to be. I can't wait to get back. But in any event, you're not tasked with running the partnership, the property. You're tasked with providing a portion of the funds and then monitoring vis-a-vis the reporting what's going on. And I want to further state that we, beaplanner.com or Nathan Ross CPA or NP Ross CPAs, do not sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners. Rather, we seek to assist your understanding of what you're signing up for regarding opportunities you may be considering. And we'll, along the way, if you engage with us, we will show you how to evaluate sponsors, the opportunities themselves, and private placement offerings so that you can select from among the projects you become familiar with the ones that may, underscore may, achieve the highest odds of a favorable outcome. At base, these partnerships are businesses. And for any of you that have had your own small business or have been close enough to operations, maybe the financial side of a large business, you understand that every business, life itself, has uncertainty. And if you think you're investing in a real estate private partnership syndication and it's going to work just like a treasury bill where you're going to collect interest date certain, you may want to reconsider, because businesses have their ebbs and flows when it comes to cash flow, when it comes to performance of all types in the real estate, the commercial real estate, multifamily business. You've got to have tenants in your units for the process to start in terms of cash flow. And sometimes you have vacancies that exceed what we would like. We like to be as full as possible in multifamily. Sometimes that might not happen. You may have a pandemic come along that affects your occupancy. You may have a lot of things come along. TxDOT may come through and decide they need part of your property as a easement for expanding the highway. You may have interest rates tick up where all of a sudden you've got to raise some rents to cover that, and you may lose tenants that come up for renewal. There's many uncertainties that afflict the commercial real estate space and the residential. And so don't think of your investment in a real estate private partnership syndication as if you're buying a few shares of Apple stock or some other stock. And I can't remember if Apple pays a dividend. They may or may not. But bottom line is a lot of public companies don't pay dividends. You're simply making money when you go to sell the stock and maybe repurchase it or buy some other stocks. But the thing about real estate that's pretty remarkable is the way we make money, and it's based on our net operating income and effectively the interest rate. It's not exactly the interest rate. It's what we call a cap rate, which tends to go hand in hand with real estate fluctuations. It goes the other way, though. So if the interest rate goes up, well, they actually move together in that case. The necessary cap rate goes up, which means your property is worth less, versus when rates go down, the cap rate goes down, which makes your cash flow, your NOI, or net operating income, worth more. And that's all I'm going to say about that today. We'll be discussing more of that on a future show. But in any event, for those of you that don't have advisors that understand either the real estate taxation area of the law or retirement plan taxation, we focus in large measure on how to help you access your retirement funds, whether you're in a 401 or a IRA, to invest those funds into these real estate private partnerships. There's significant advantages tax-wise and otherwise in doing that. Let's do this. Oh, forgot to mention, I've updated the website for the first time in a while. The news page if you go to the show link on baplanner.com, it's going to take you to our affiliated site, baplannershow.com, and you'll see a link there for at the top, resources is the link that you can hover over, and it'll do a drop down where it shows news. And if you'll pick that, you'll be taken to the news page, and we've got several, in fact, all the articles this week link to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget site, and it's a Washington-based think tank of bipartisan, I'm going to say, parties. Unfortunately, the Republican or the GOP entrants on that board are your classic rhinos. I'm not going to mention names, but let's just say there's no Rand Paul or Thomas Massie out there. Interesting, they're both from Kentucky, right, in our Congress. But overall, they're pretty good. The director of the CRFB is Maya McGinnis. She's interviewed on a lot of podcasts. David McKnight's Power of Zero podcast, which for those of you that listen to the show, you know I've mentioned Mr. McKnight from time to time. We are a member of his mentor group, and it really, really good contact. He gets it when it comes to all things tax train. That's the tax train barreling down the tracks right now that you and I are going to get overrun with if we don't take some actions to avoid it. But in any event, we're going to talk about several articles. Well, maybe a couple of them. I don't think we'll get through them all, but they're out there for the taking. And you'll notice this week's, I've changed the site a bit so it makes it easy to see which ones are newer. The blue color text represent the entries I made just this week, most of them from yesterday. And these are things that are especially relevant in the times we find ourselves. And so let's go ahead. We'll take our first break now. And when we circle back, we'll get into talking about some of the debt issues and the reason that taxes will have to go up here in the near term. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. But I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And today, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to spend some time talking about some very recent articles that have good information on what to expect policy-wise from a tax and debt perspective, and you know, with regard to our federal budget. You know, we use a site that I refer to often on the air, usdebtclock.org, to keep up with the real-time calculations of what we see, you know, going on with the debt. And I got that site up here again. And if you're really fanatical about keeping up with this topic on a per second basis, you might even choose to put the mobile app on your phone, but it'll be depressing. I'm just going to warn you, you might want to check it a little bit less frequent. But the current U.S. national debt, now these numbers vary a bit if you look up what other sites say. I know Fox News or Fox Business tracks this, and I assume they're looking at this site to get some of their data, but they're always a little bit off. Maybe it's theirs isn't updated real time each day, but it is updated current. You know, if you click the link from their homepage, you'll instantly be taken to that number, whatever it is. But it's not moving like it is at usdebtclock.org. It's like a pinball machine. But anyway, $36,450 billion is the current deficit that we admit to. It's not the total U.S. debt. You'd have to drop down a bit on that site to see the unfunded debt interest, and the total debt is now over $100 trillion, $101 trillion. In fact, it's closer to $102 trillion, which is amazing. I mean, there's just no other way to explain it. And you know, if you look at the U.S. debt to GDP ratio, which is the real number that we need to focus on, I mean, it's one thing to owe money. It's another thing to owe money percentage-wise relative to your income. And if you think about GDP as the nation's income, we now have borrowed more than 120, it's almost 123% of our GDP. So debt to GDP ratio. And if you back up to the year 2000, we were just, well, we were over half. We were 59%. And if you go back to the 80s, we were about 34.5%. But if you go back to 1960, and I believe this was due to World War II's borrowing, we were at 53%. So we have been higher if you compare it with, you know, year 2000, but we've never at this point, or at least not in our lifetime, been over the 100% mark as we are now. But in any event, this is something to keep an eye on, because this, the unspoken fear, well, it's not unspoken in economic terms, but you know, the U.S. has a privileged position in the world's financial machinery, you might say, in that we alone can basically print our own currency in terms of how much we choose to add to the pile, you might say. And that's based on, it's very simple, it's because the rest of the world trusts us. And at the point, if and when the rest of the world quits trusting us, we got a problem, because we won't be able to spend at will, which is what we're doing now. So what's going to happen here that's going to push this issue is here in the next 4 to 5 years, somewhere beginning 2028, 2029, we're going to hit the end of our current U.S. budget availability, meaning that the discretionary part of the U.S. budget, the part that we argue over in Congress as to whether we're going to, well, I got a current one for you, whether we're going to fund U.S. aid, the department or the, I don't want to call it an agency, but it's under attack now, because finally some of Congress has awakened and realized some of the unbelievable waste that we're spending money on, that I guess the people that are getting the money have been holding their breath that it's ever going to be discovered that we're paying for some of the things we're paying, all the little slush funds that the recipients are getting money out of. And boy, you can tell who that is. Just look at the news here the last week, and you would have thought that we had kidnapped the firstborn of many of Congress's willing participants that are collecting those funds. It's amazing. It's embarrassing to see how it's uprooted the, I guess, the life plans that some of the left has had. And, you know, and then the other thing that's going on is the same phenomenon is now being seen with regard to Trump's decision to try to abolish the Department of Education. You know, I noticed just earlier this morning there were some Congress folks that were trying to get into the Department of Education, and it's been locked off. You know, they can't get in. And I'm watching Congresswoman, I believe she's still a Congresswoman from California. She's at least at the protest there today in front of the building trying to get in. I'll promise you, she had to Google the Department of Education to find out where that building was. It's probably the first time in her life she's ever been there. And now that they see those big piles of money, you know, getting ready to elude their grasp and their influence, boy, they're all over it, right? They care a lot now about continuing to spend money there. But anyway, let's before we go into some of the interest rate phenomenon and the sad state of the debt, let's look at a topic that's going to impact the debt, and it's not reflected on any of the debt clocks that you look at now, and that is, as Mr. Trump would say, the most beautiful word in the English language. How much revenue will Trump's tariff, by the way, is the answer to that question, raise? How much revenue will Trump's tariffs raise? February 1st, President Trump signed three executive orders imposing new tariffs on goods from China, Canada, and Mexico. Below is an estimate. This is from the CRFB, again, bipartisan think tank. They try to at least stay in the middle on their political leanings. Says President Trump's tariffs will include a 10% additional tariff on all imports from China that went into effect on February 4th. And that again is the CRFB, estimate that this tariff will raise $20 billion in revenue through the end of calendar year 25 and $200 billion through fiscal year 2035. On a conventional basis, which basically means a very vanilla basis. And the U.S. debt clock also tracks, let's see, I don't have that section. Oh, yeah, I do. It tracks our current trade deficits. Now, think about this, because this is our opportunity for raising funds based on, what if we just leveled the playing field? And what if we were able to either sell an equal amount of products into certain countries around the world as we're buying here? And just so you understand what the imbalance is, and if you don't think this is a big deal, go back and find the articles. I'll try to find it from Trump's first presidency term, when he was in Europe at one of the, I can't remember if it was G7 or G20, and of course he had already threatened tariffs, and everybody was bent out of shape, you know, around the world, and they just couldn't imagine paying us tariffs on our goods. And Trump's response was very simple, very easy to explain, and it shows exactly where the soft spots are. He said, "Okay, I got an idea. Y'all don't like our tariffs. How about all of us, all 20 nations or however many were in the group that was meeting there, how about we dial our tariffs back to zero? How about nobody charged?" Oh, you would have thought the end of the world was coming with that. And that just goes to show you. So when I tell you the number here, you'll understand why there's significant dollars that if we just leveled the playing field, whether we're charging a tariff or we went to zero on everybody, it would be a significant boost, likely, to our GDP. The current trade balance, let's see here, I had it here. The U.S. trade deficit, here it is. It's all the way down at the bottom of that U.S. debt clock page. Is $1,165 billion. Think about that. If we did just a 10%, that'd be, what, $110 billion? It's a lot of money. And so even on these three, to put it in perspective, just this year it would raise $20 billion. It'd be more than that in future years, obviously, for the whole year. But 10 years out, all the way through fiscal 2035, just at this level, and this is just from China, $200 billion. Canada and Mexico would be another, just this year, $110 billion. And if we make them permanent, $1.3 trillion through 2035. These are significant extra collections if it is a tariff. And if it's not, it'd be even better, I would suggest, if we could sell our products into those countries and generate zero tariffs paid. But in any event, so don't lose sight of that when we talk about some of the other topics we're getting ready to hit, which is the interest cost. Don't forget, we've got this huge pool of potential revenues. But anyway, let's, one way or the other, directly or indirectly, let's take a look at the first article on our list. And I know I'm going to forget it if I don't mention it now. The last article in blue, it would be the sixth article on the list, CBO releases January 25, 2025 budget and economic outlook. That is the 10-year report that they update every year to show you what CBO, and again, that's Congressional Budget Office, that's the financial umpire, if you will, that calls all the balls and strikes. They're going to be intimately involved with the Republican effort to use a reconciliation to get Trump's financial program passed. But in any event, that was released, not 3 weeks ago, and you can get to it from that link there, and it'll take you through the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget. But anyway, let's go to the article, Interest Rates Will Explode with a $5.5 trillion Reconciliation Package. And that's what's being proposed by the House leadership, which, you know, obviously they're doing it at the behest of Mr. Trump's spending preferences. Recent press report, let's just read through this article, indicated that House leadership may be considering a budget resolution that would allow up to $5.5 trillion of net primary deficit increases through the reconciliation process. If enacted, this would increase additional borrowing by about 30% over the next decade. So this is right in line with the CBO forecast, for 10 years, same period. And it would give us a record. The debt to GDP ratio would set a record at 133%. And you may recall, earlier, I said we were at 122, so it would jump up. We're currently at almost 123, so it would basically increase it by 10%, which nearly doubles the debt growth under our current law. So this budget reconciliation, the new budget law or the new funding law, would raise it nearly double the debt growth rate expected if we do nothing. The higher debt would further explode interest payments. Already, interest costs have exceeded spending on Medicare and defense and are on track to reach and exceed record levels as a share of the economy. We estimate that passing an additional $5.5 trillion of new and extended rate cuts or tax cuts and spending without offsets. Now, there's the magic words, without offsets, because the tariffs, we've already pointed out, would be significant offsets. And then the economic growth rate is something that CRFB tends to be fairly conservative on. So in any event, here's what this reconciliation proposed level budget would do. It would boost interest costs by $1.3 trillion over the next decade, exceeding $250 billion per year in increase by 2035. It would also increase annual federal net interest payments to $2.0 trillion or 4.7% of GDP by 2035, far above the previous record of 3.2%. It would boost the interest to revenue ratio from 9% back in 2021 to 18% now, today, to 27% by 2035, compared with the current law that would increase it to 22% by 2035. And this, yeah, their conclusion is it increases the risk of a debt spiral by pushing up long-term interest rates and potentially slowing the long-term growth rate. And that really is probably the biggest risk we have, because look at what inflation has done so far. And, you know, for those of you that haven't eaten out lately, that'd be a good measure, I would suggest, of how bad inflation's gotten. Some have argued that this $5 trillion proposal is actually far less costly, and I would agree with that, either by measuring it relative to a current policy line or current policy baseline, quote unquote, or claiming fantastical levels of economic growth. Yet, as we've seen before, switching baselines would be dangerous and reckless because it ignores but doesn't change the fact that unpaid-for tax extensions increase debt and substantially worsen the fiscal outlook. Well, that is true. However, there's ways of offsetting it. We've already mentioned the tariffs. We also have the ability to tweak the tax code to generate significant extra revenues. So let's go on and see what CRFB is saying. And while thoughtful tax cuts can strengthen the economy, the effects are likely to be modest and offset in part or whole by the negative economic effects of higher borrowing, etc. In other words, inflation kicks in. Independent estimates have found that extending the expiring provisions of the TCJA, that would be the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which, as you may recall from listening to our show, many of those provisions expire 112026. But in any event, extending the expiring provisions could pay for a -2% to 14% of themselves, producing $600 billion, a dynamic feedback on the high end, or losing an extra $60 billion on the low end. No estimate is even close to the $3 trillion that the current House of Representatives is projecting. So that's something to keep in mind, that, you know, their projection is a lot rosier than many other economists. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and we will circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and vague dreams. And there are many just like me. With big dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we've been talking about the increase in interest expense that we'll be paying as a country if we squeeze a reconciliation package out for Mr. Trump's spending plans and preferences. And I want to end this discussion here briefly, and then I want to talk about, well, what can we do as individual citizens to sidestep the onslaught that's coming. But in any event, I just mentioned that, you know, the House of Representatives, which is, you know, controlled by the GOP now, the Republicans, they're estimating a much rosier picture than some independent economists like the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, which is where this article appears on their website. They say, just to wrap this topic up, the additional borrowing would add $1.3 trillion of interest payments. If lawmakers pass a bill that increases deficits by $5.5 trillion, we estimate that will lead to approximately $1.3 trillion in additional interest payments over the next decade, including the debt service on the additional borrowing and the added cost from the higher interest rates creditors will charge for holding the extra debt. By 2035, which is the 10-year look forward that the Congressional Budget Office considers, we estimate such a package would increase interest costs by more than $250 billion a year. And just to put that in perspective, interest payments, which are already high and rising, would exceed $2 trillion, just crossed the $1 trillion mark this past September, would exceed $2 trillion per year by the end of the decade, compared with less than $1.8 trillion under current law. Now, I don't know about you, but $1.8 trillion is scary enough. Now, again, these assumptions are different when you look at different economists, but it's so bad, they're so egregious, it almost doesn't matter. It's hard to keep your head from spinning. But in any event, so I've got about 10 minutes left here to discuss, well, one of my favorite topics, which is how to avoid the obviously impending tax train that's barreling down the tracks. When we run out of the discretionary portion of the budget, the remaining discretionary piece of the budget, and that will occur somewhere in the 2028 or 29, maybe 2030, if interest rates were to magically drop back down to the 2 or 3% level that we used to enjoy, you know, the tax train would be more in the 2030 time frame if that were to happen. But bottom line is, we will no longer have enough tax receipts to afford to pay 100% of the interest on the U.S. debt as we now do. And so, as we now do after we borrow more to fund it in part. So that's when I mentioned earlier, the rest of the world may not trust us as much to buy our debt. That's when that's going to happen. When you can't pay or be assured of paying interest on the debt to people that are buying your paper, your treasury bonds, then, you know, the rates will skyrocket, among other things, if they'll even buy them. And the rest of the world's going to be in an equally difficult position. I mean, again, when everybody looks to us to be the leader, when the leader falters, you can rest assured there's more than a few economies around the world, a lot of economies that are going to falter. So let's just focus on our economy, our individual economy, what we do to make a living or to provide for our families in terms of the cash flow that we need to pay our bills and buy our food and pay for the car and all those things. What I'm going to suggest to you is that, one, you want to have your money. If the recent period of inflation has proven one thing, it's that hard assets is where you want to have your money, either directly or indirectly. Because hard assets, meaning a piece of real estate, would be the one that comes to mind in our arena. Because, and you think further into real estate, you think about what's the most necessary type of real estate. Maybe hospitals, certain retail, not nearly the widespread parameters as multifamily apartment buildings, but apartment buildings have the rare distinction or benefit of the fact that everybody needs a place to lay their head at night. They may not need a place to show up to a cubicle every day. The remote connectivity option has become commonplace, although there are efforts, obviously, including our federal government, to return people to the office, quote unquote. And that could happen, probably will happen to an extent, but the issue in terms of you deciding where to put your money is you want to put it where there's the most demand for it. And I would suggest to you that multifamily housing units will always have an appeal for people that like to sleep at night, right? And so, you know, the strategy that we work on is to help you get your money out of the market, or at least a chunk of it out of the market and into these real estate private partnership syndications involving multifamily assets. And the beauty of that is not just the anticipated above average cash flow, it's the ability for you to move out of the pre-tax world. Let's assume you're in a 401k now and you've got investments in the stock market and it's in a pre-tax bucket. Okay, some 401s, depending on who you work for, they may have adopted a 401 program that has a Roth component. We hope they have. All the self-directed 401s that we create with our clients have both a pre-tax side of the trust and they have a Roth from day one. So you've got the ability to move or convert, is the word that's used, your pre-tax 401 funds to a Roth 401 without leaving the plan. You do the same thing if you were going to use the IRA mechanism to do it. It's not, the IRA is not nearly as efficient, can involve paying some annual tax. If there's mortgage money involved, which there will be on every piece of real estate you ever buy if you're looking to maximize or fully exploit cash flow. But even a Roth IRA pays the unrelated debt-financed income tax. It's part of the UBIT or unrelated business income tax. And so while we would say the IRA, the Roth IRA is better than a traditional non-Roth IRA, it's not nearly as efficient as the Roth 401, which is exempt from that unrelated debt financed income tax related to the relative portion of taxable income that is generated vis-a-vis the having the leverage or the mortgage involved. So we have an ability to convert those pre-tax funds over to Roth, and when we convert Roth funds, regardless of how you may be doing it, you could do it while it's in your account at Schwab if you don't mind paying a higher conversion tax, because the value that we're going to convert at, think of it as the tax base that we're going to pay the conversion tax on, because when we convert funds from Roth, pre-tax to Roth, at that time we pay the tax that applies to the amount of income or asset base, I should say, not income, asset base that we're converting. So if you're in, I'm going to use Apple stock again, if you're in Apple stock and you've got $100,000 of Apple stock that you want to convert to the Roth side of your 401, you're going to pay whatever the end of day value is in tax for that year when you file your tax return, your 1040. So 100%, if it's worth $100,000 on that day, you're going to pay 100% or maybe $40,000, depending on your other items of income that year, versus if you've already moved your money into private real estate partnerships, that's a private company, you're going to get private company discounts. And let's just suggest they're significantly less than market of a public stock. There's no tradability, no marketability. You can't just go sell that partnership invested on a publicly traded exchange. You don't have any voting control. We've got a list of 20 to 25 risk factors that are mandated by the SEC to disclose to you. And you're going to get to use all of those risk factors to come up with a revised value, a fair market value, to calculate that tax on. So we've talked about this concept many times. If you're still sitting by thinking, well, should I invest in that area? And should I consider the Roth conversion? Go to our website, baplanner.com. Fill out at least step one, form one, the client profile, and then schedule a call, and I'll be happy to walk you through the relevant criteria and help you determine how we might help you. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back this Sunday at 7 a.m. with our cyber version of the Be A Planner Show,
right here on AM 700. Thank you again.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.